Wednesday, September 14th, 2022. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope your week is going well. I hope you, your family, your friends, you're all staying strong. You're all staying healthy right now. And hey, we gotta say it, right? Like, we have to talk about it. How great is it to have football back again? Not just college football. We have everything back. We've got the NFL. We've got college football. We've got games on Thursday. We've got games on Sunday. We've got games on Sunday night. We've got games on Wednesday night. You might even find games on like Friday night here and there. How great is it to have football back again? I'll be very honest with you. If I'm just being completely honest with you, this last weekend, I spent an embarrassing amount of time on the couch watching football. I mean, it was bad. On Saturday, like, I'm up, I'm ready, I'm watching that first game rolling out, 10 a.m., there's a game going, I'm watching it. I'm watching that game starting at noon. I'm flipping over back and forth between a few games there. I'm going over at 1:30. We've got a big time game then. I'm flipping back and forth, finding a game maybe that starts at 3, finding those games that starts at 5, then switching over to the next game starting at 7, 7:30, even watching Pac-12 games late, 9, almost midnight. Then I went to sleep that night with literally the only plan the next day, getting up and doing it all over again, this time with the NFL, watching game after game after game. I was on Red Zone. I was flipping around. I was switching it to other games. And now, you know, the weeks just start flying by. Because, I mean, it's Wednesday today. Hey, tomorrow night, we've already got the Los Angeles Chargers going to Kansas City to face the Chiefs. Hey, I'm all in. I'm ready for another week. Does it get any better than this time of year? We go from so dry, nothing to watch, nothing whatsoever to watch. Repeats on all your favorite shows. No sports. The only thing there is to watch some garbage baseball game no one even cares about. The NBA's over. The NHL's over. It's all over. And then you get that little morsel of college football. You get those week zero games. Kind of whets your appetite. You get some NFL preseason. They kind of make you physically sick. Then it starts to ramp up. You get that week one of college. And now we get week two of college and week one of the NFL. And now life is good again. I know I say it every year. I know you're probably sick of hearing me say it. But it truly is the most wonderful time of the year. Football is back and I couldn't be happier. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, be sure that you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com. We have new articles going up every week. I'm putting up articles now, mostly about the Denver Broncos. It could be about maybe some local college football. And you know, young Jimmy, I'm just going to give you a little hint. He might be working on a current event for his article coming out tomorrow. You have to trust me on this. You need to make sure you go to DailyDoseSports.com and check out the new things going up over there every week. But you know, it's not just the articles. We have links to the podcast. We have links to the video. Yes, we even have links to the Daily Dose gear. You can get a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, maybe a coffee mug, whatever you might need. Make sure you stop by DailyDoseSports.com every week and check out what is going on over there. We have new things going up every single week. Hey, today on the show, what else are we going to be talking? We're going to be discussing all that went on in the world of football. You know, we are starting to learn some interesting things in the world of college football. And as usual in the NFL, everyone's talking about the NFL. Everyone is hyped about the NFL. But what does everyone do when the NFL starts playing their games? They overreact. They say nonsensical things, things that don't make any sense, things they can't possibly back up. But we want to have that reaction. And usually, it's a big overreaction. Going to talk about some of those today on The Dose. Plus, we will have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you. It is NFL flavored, and it is looking back on some teams that had some big expectations going into their NFL season, going to be talking about some very interesting things over there. But first, we have a couple of news stories that I do want to talk about. Not sure if you saw this, but Golden State Warriors superstar Steph Curry told Rolling Stone magazine last month that the Golden State Warriors had internal talks about maybe bringing back superstar Kevin Durant, and that Steph would love to play again with his former teammate. Now, we all know KD ultimately got things done with the Brooklyn Nets, but Steph had a few things to say. Here's what Curry said. There was a conversation internally amongst us about if he was available, would we want him? Every team has those conversations. And obviously, in our situation, they're going to call me and they're going to ask me, how do you feel about it? Curry said he was never hesitant in endorsing the idea of a reunion with Kevin Durant, who was his teammate for three seasons, in which the Golden State Warriors won two titles, and Kevin Durant won back-to-back NBA Finals MVP awards. Now we know KD's time with the Warriors ended in 2019 when he left for the Brooklyn Nets in that sign-and-trade deal, but Curry also said he talked to his brother Seth Curry, who is a current teammate of Durant, and they discussed this idea. Curry said, the idea of playing with KD and knowing who he is as a person from our history in those 3 years, I think KD's a really good dude. I think he's just misunderstood. I think he had certain things happen in his life that hurt his ability to trust people around him in a sense of making him feel safe at all times. So all those things, I understand. Having played with him and gotten to know him, I love that dude. Hey, this is huge news. I know there's a lot of people right now down on Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's crazy. Kevin Durant's on social media talking nonsense. Kevin Durant might be like a psycho. What's with that dude? Hey, Steph says he would have taken Kevin Durant back? This is shocking news coming from Rolling Stone magazine. Big news. Amazing news. They're telling us Steph Curry would like to have another all-star to play with. That is shocking. I am stunned. Steph Curry would like to have another guy take some pressure off of him. Yeah, that sure is amazing. Tell you what, Rolling Stone, why don't you go ahead and stick to telling us why, like, Missy Elliott is a better songwriter than Brian Wilson and how Bob Dylan is a better singer than Stevie Wonder. Leave the sports stuff to the experts, because you breaking this news like it's breaking news isn't really breaking news. Even as much as you tell us it is. Rolling Stone, go back to smoking pot because you have no idea what you're talking about in the world of sports. That might come back to haunt me here in a few weeks. You might have to keep tuning into the dose because we might have someone from Rolling Stone coming on maybe in a few weeks. We're working on that. Speaking of the sports media world, I have a question for you. And when I ask it, you're going to say, come on, Clint. Now you're really talking nonsense. But I have this question I want to ask you. Is ESPN in serious trouble? Have you watched ESPN lately? Have you noticed that they are just blatantly jamming tennis and the WNBA down our throats? And I mean, we know why. They have now lost the NFL. They're losing college football. And here's more bad news. And this might be the most disappointing part of football being back, at least for me. Kids, college game day is slipping. You know, I'm just so used to getting up on Saturday mornings and watching college game day and seeing, you know, Reese Davis and Kirk Herbstreit and Lee Corso, and they bring on, you know, their guest picker, and they have creative fans with their funny signs, and they do game previews. They give you some inside information. Herbstreit and Corso are great. Well, except that in watching so far this year, Reese Davis is still amazing. Totally on top of his game. Kirk Herbstreit is still very, very good. Probably would be a first round draft pick if you were picking sports guys to fill your booth with. He's that good. And then, I don't want to be mean, but Corso is starting to resemble Joe Biden. But wait, it gets worse because the guests that ESPN is picking to come in and make their guest picks, they literally know nothing about football. I get that you can't have a ringer every single week. But in week one, opening week, big matchups, big games, they had Jack Harlow come out. Okay, I guess, but Harlow literally barely even knew any of the teams that were playing. He had no insight whatsoever. Can you at least get celeb guest pickers that know something about sports that are at least sports fans? Because Harlow wasn't a sports fan. Then last week, they actually brought in former NFL player Pat McAfee just to try to drum up some business. Now he's going to be full-time on the panel. And it was okay. It was all right. But now I wonder, like, is it too many people? Here's the most disturbing part for me. I flipped the channel. I tried watching a few other college football preview shows. And I'll be honest with you, I never thought that would happen. But that's where we are. ESPN is in some serious trouble. I've told you before, you might not like it. You might disagree with me. ESPN has gone down the political route. They have chosen to cover politics instead of sports. And most sports fans don't really want to hear about politics. And as a result, I believe they have run themselves into some serious, seriously hard times. ESPN might be in some big, big trouble as far as their future, because people may be going elsewhere for everything else to do with sports. I never thought that day would come. I really didn't. It used to be I got up and turned SportsCenter on every morning, and I turned on College Game Day every Saturday. I'm not doing either one of those things like I used to. Okay, coming back. The college football and NFL seasons are now fully underway. What have we learned so far in college football? Got a couple of things we need to talk about. And in the NFL, what is everyone already overreacting to? We've still got a lot to get to today on the Daily Dose. So college football week two is now in the books. And I'm telling you right now, if you weren't watching, it was another very, very entertaining weekend of college football. But right now, let's take a look at some of the things that we learned this last week in college football. And I think one of the biggest things we learned, it was a bad day to be a ranked team this past Sunday. Number 6, Texas A&M lost to Appalachian State. Number 8, Notre Dame lost to Marshall. Number 9, Baylor lost to BYU. Number 10, Florida lost to Kentucky. Number 17, Pitt lost to Tennessee. Number 19, Wisconsin went down to Washington State. And number 25, Houston got beat by Texas Tech. 7 teams ranked in the top 25 got taken out during a week, I might add, that we all kind of thought, okay, this might be like a quiet week, not big matchups. There won't be anything close. No, this was a wild week. Week two was crazy. And now we go to week three, which does have a few marquee matchups. Again, not a huge week, but Florida State goes to Louisville on Friday night. That's not a bad game. Number 6, Oklahoma goes to Nebraska. Going to talk about Nebraska in just a few minutes. Number 14, Michigan State goes to undefeated Washington. Is Washington really worthy of that undefeated record? Number 12, BYU, a team that I am very interested by, goes to number 25, Oregon. The Ducks can't afford another big loss. Number 22, Penn State will go to Auburn. And number 13, Miami goes to number 24, Texas A&M. Hey, the college football season is off to a very strong start. But this last week, if you're a ranked team, yeah, you had a big bullseye on you. We definitely learned that. Now, we do have some news, and this is old news, but we haven't discussed it yet, so we need to discuss it right now. Because we did learn that the college football playoffs board of managers unanimously voted to expand the college football playoff to 12 teams in 2026, but they are encouraging the league's commissioners to try to implement this as soon as 2024. Hey, that's going to be wild. A 12-team playoff? That will be crazy, right? And yet, remember this. Remember, all along, I have been saying bad things are going to end up coming from all the name and likeness stuff, all the transfer portal stuff, because all we hear is, hey, this is free money. Hey, there's free transfers. This is paradise. This is great. Yeah, about that. Things are going to be a little bit different now. Because yes, you can get your NIL money. You can transfer when you'd like to. And also, we're going to need you to play, let's say, 14 to 16 games per season. Wait a minute. We're only playing 12. That's too many. What about injuries? Yeah, we don't care. You've got NIL money. Go ahead and use that. Well, if that's the case, then I'll just sit out the bowl games. I just won't play the bowl games. I won't play the playoff games if I have to. Yeah, we don't care. You're an employee. If you want to sit out those games, we'll dock your pay. You watch. It's coming. Remember, nobody rides for free. There's no such thing as free money. There's no such thing as, if this is just too good to be true, now we all get paid big money. We can sign million-dollar deals. It's going to come at a cost. Never, ever forget that. This playoff news, exciting for fans, might not be as exciting for the players that we think it might be. You know, a couple things we did learn over the weekend, though. We learned that the Texas Longhorns, they got themselves a big win. Texas took a 2-point lead over number one Alabama with just over a minute to play on Saturday. And then after the game, Longhorns head coach Steve Sarkisian said they didn't lose. Here's the bad news. They actually did lose. They lost because Alabama drove down the field. They kicked the game-winning field goal, which is 5 seconds to play. And Alabama gets past Texas 20-19. But now we will hear about how Texas is back and Texas hung with the big boys. And why do you just know they're going to lose like Kansas State this year? But hey, nothing like a good moral victory. Congrats, Texas! You almost won. We learned over the weekend that Appalachian State, hey, they are not afraid. Make no mistake about that. After playing North Carolina in week one and having one of the wildest games that I personally have ever seen, I mean, Appalachian State lost 63-61 in that game. There were 40 points scored in the fourth quarter alone. Well, after that game, and they lost, now they get to go to College Station this last weekend to face number 6 Texas A&M. If you can't beat North Carolina, what is Jimbo Fisher's crazy recruiting class going to do to you? Turns out, not that much. Appalachian State beat A&M 17-14. And you know, Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M, they keep having these big recruiting classes. But never forget, you're Texas A&M. You can't have nice things. And remember, that SEC schedule is still coming for them. Good luck. Meanwhile, Appalachian State, everything was against them. They're coming off of a crushing loss. They beat A&M. Then there's weather issues. They're stuck at the airport. They couldn't fly home until the next day. App State doesn't care. Next up, they have Troy. And Troy, you had better brace up, because the Appalachian State Mountaineers, they are not afraid. They definitely proved that this last weekend. You know, there was a lot of talk prior to the college football season that being number 5 might have been a tad too high for Notre Dame. Because remember, this team did have some holes to fill. But then in week one, Notre Dame hung with Ohio State for a minute. The Buckeyes actually had to scrape together some late drives to put Notre Dame away. Maybe Notre Dame is better than we thought. Maybe they are worthy of a number 5 ranking. After Brian Kelly bolted for LSU, the Domers hired new head coach Marcus Freeman, even though he's only 35 years old. But we heard how everyone loves this guy. They love playing for him. They're going to play hard for him. And yet, Marcus Freeman is young. And there are certain things that youth can't do. You're inexperienced. You just don't know. Well, this past Saturday, we got to see some of that inexperience. Because Notre Dame got beat at home by Marshall. And all day, Notre Dame couldn't stop the run. They turned the football over 3 times. That's a team that wasn't ready to play for whatever reason. Here's something crazy to think about, though. Marcus Freeman is now the first Notre Dame coach in Notre Dame history to lose his first 3 games. Because remember, he took over for the Fiesta Bowl game last year which they lost to Oklahoma State. Notre Dame is now 0-2, and they still have BYU. They still have Clemson. They still have USC on the schedule. Marcus Freeman had better figure things out quickly. Speaking of coaches that needed to figure out things, we learned that Nebraska head coach Scott Frost, his seat literally could not get any hotter. You know, me and Big Rob talked about Scott Frost before the season and how we thought his seat was red hot. Well, Nebraska fired Frost on Sunday after the Cornhuskers lost at home 45-42 to Georgia Southern in a game that saw the vaunted blackshirt defense of Nebraska allow Georgia Southern 642 yards. Nebraska comes up with a $15 million buyout to end Frost's run in Lincoln. The buyout, by the way, the amount would have dropped to $7.5 million on October 1st, but the administration said they didn't feel like they could wait that long. Why? Honestly, because I think they want to look like they're willing to spend money. We're not afraid. We're willing to spend whatever it takes. I think that is literally just a sign to other prospective coaches. Look, we're doing all we can. We're trying to win. We're a big dog. I know people don't believe that, but we're still a big dog. You know, Scott Frost played at Nebraska from 95 to 97. He helped the Huskers go to 13-0. They won a share of the national title. And you know, when Frost was in his second year at the University of Central Florida, and he took Central Florida to a 13-0 season, and then they declared themselves national champions, it looked like Scott Frost might be the guy for Nebraska. He might be that guy. Maybe he's the guy to come back and restore the glory back to the Big Red. But you know, the worst part about the Scott Frost era was just watching how many times they lost close games. Nebraska is 5-22 in one-score games under Scott Frost. That's insane. In fact, no other FBS team has more than 16 one-score losses in that span. Last year, the Huskers went 3-9. 7 of those 9 losses were one-score games. This year, they started 1-2, and yes, of course, both of those losses were one-score games. For some reason, Scott Frost just couldn't figure out how to win the close games. But now, because we know Nebraska might be a little bit delusional about who they are in the landscape today, they're still thinking who they were back in the 70s and the 80s. But now we're going to be hearing about how Nebraska is going to go eat Urban Meyer or like Nick Saban or Dabo Swinney or somebody like that. I mean, they won't. They'll probably get like Brett Bielema. But Nebraska is in a weird spot because they are no longer a destination. And I hate to bring this up. You know me. I hate to bring things like this up. But always remember that the University of Nebraska fired head coach Frank Solich for going 58-19. They would kill for 58-19 now. They had no idea how good they had it. And this is all bad karma for that. Hey, we learned that Florida quarterback Anthony Richardson, well, his Heisman campaign, yeah, it's already over. Because after leading the Gators to a spectacular win over number 7 Utah in week 1, hey, it was easy to buy into that hype for Richardson. Maybe this kid's going to be better than anyone thinks. He can run. He can throw. He might be a sneaky Heisman candidate. And then the Gators hosted number 20 Kentucky on Saturday, and Anthony Richardson crashed back to earth in spectacular fashion. He went just 14-35. For 143 yards, he had 2 interceptions, 1 for a game-clinching pick 6, and he only managed to rush for 4 yards. Kentucky beats Florida in back-to-back seasons for the first time since the 70s. Hey, Anthony Richardson is a talented kid, but again, he's inexperienced. He's going to have some bumps like this along the way. We will see if new head coach Billy Napier can rally the Florida Gators, because they have some really, really big dogs left on that schedule, including Tennessee, in just 2 weeks. But the Heisman candidate stuff, yeah, that's done. You can forget that. You know, we learned over this weekend that the Sun Belt Conference is a lot better than people think. This is crazy to think about. But Georgia Southern beat Nebraska. Marshall beat Notre Dame. Appalachian State beat Texas A&M. Hey, you might not want to sleep on that Sun Belt Conference this year. Because if you do, you might get sent home with a loss. And don't look now. But Alabama hosts Louisiana Monroe this week. And South Alabama is going to UCLA this week. I know. It's Sun Belt. Who cares? I'm just saying this. Be very, very careful when you deal with that Sun Belt Conference. We have also learned that the defending national champion Georgia Bulldogs, I know everyone's saying they lost so many people. There's no way they can be that good. They look like they might be good enough to do it again. In week one, Georgia faced the number 11 Oregon Ducks. Well, number 11 at the time, because Georgia whipped them 49-3. Then, this past week in week two, when all these ranked teams across the country were stumbling because they had big wins in week one and they read their own press clippings, they got all the pats on the back, and in week two, we had all kinds of upsets because all these kids came back to work not prepared. Well, Georgia faced Samford, beat them 33-0, like they should have. In a week that had so many upsets, the Georgia Bulldogs didn't miss a beat. And that should scare everyone. Now, Georgia goes to South Carolina this week to face Spencer Rattler. Why do I feel like they're not going to have much of a problem with him at all? I know we are all putting Alabama at one. Right now, the Georgia Bulldogs look like the best team in the country. We'll see if they can keep that going. Okay, let's move over to the NFL. Because the NFL kicked off their 2022 season on Thursday night. We had a full slate of games on Sunday. We had a game on Monday night. But you know, week one in the NFL, it's different. You have like 3 months to prepare for one game. And now with the preseason being what it is, teams don't even play their starters. We've never even seen some of these guys on the field together at the same time. So week one, it can be a really weird week with a lot of unexpected things. And what happens is everybody jumps on and says, oh, did you see that? That's how the whole season's going to go. No, it's not. So let's talk about the NFL this week. And let's look at some of the biggest overreactions to some of the games that we saw. And one of the biggest overreactions that we saw was a lot of bad teams got wins in week one. The Chicago Bears beat the San Francisco 49ers. The Cleveland Browns beat the Carolina Panthers. The New York Giants beat the Tennessee Titans. The Seattle Seahawks beat the Denver Broncos. Maybe these teams that we thought were going to be terrible aren't going to be as bad as we thought they would. Or maybe that's an overreaction. Because maybe it was just 1 week and they're still going to be awful. Week one in the NFL can be a complete aberration. Let's wait and see how all of this looks in a month, because I suspect it's going to look a little bit different. Never put too much faith in week one in the NFL, because a lot of times it makes zero sense. And that's not just now. It's been for a long time, but it's even more so now. Here's another overreaction we're seeing. The Buffalo Bills, oh, they're going undefeated. After beating the defending Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams in LA 31-10 last Thursday, the Bills look totally unbeatable. Quarterback Josh Allen, he's so good. Von Miller adds some pass rush. The running game was even clicking. This team's going 20-0. Maybe. But it's such a long season. Make no mistake, in a season as long as the NFL's, attrition will affect everyone. What do we talk about every year with the NFL? Parity. Is Buffalo really, really good? Yes, but will they have injuries? Of course they will. Will there be bumps? Will there be times that they struggle? Yeah, most definitely. There will. Hey, Buffalo is the favorite. No question. They are not unbeatable. Opening night for the Super Bowl champion team, this year it was the Rams, it's always a big distraction. They're unveiling the banner. They're handing out the rings. That doesn't help you to get ready to play. And to get ready to play a team like the Bills, who is laser focused this year, make no mistake, the Bills are going to be the favorite this year. Are they unbeatable? No, they're not. They can still be beaten. Another overreaction that we're hearing is that the Kansas City Chiefs offense it might be even better without Tyreek Hill. They absolutely steamrolled the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday, 44-21, and quarterback Patrick Mahomes threw for 360 yards and 5 touchdowns. The Chiefs don't miss Tyreek one bit. Andy Reid, dude just reloads and racks up yards and racks up points every year. And that's 100% true. And if you get to play Arizona every week, you're going to keep doing that. But that Arizona defense, they look below average. They had no pass rush. They have no depth in their defensive backfield. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the Chiefs won't have a potent offense. They will. They have way too many weapons. But again, they'll have some bumps. Let's watch Kansas City over the next even 3 weeks. This next week, tomorrow night, they're home against the Chargers. That'll be interesting. Then they go to Indianapolis to face the Colts, and then they go to Tampa to face the Buccaneers. At the end of that, we're going to have a way more accurate assessment of what that Chiefs offense is really capable of and whether or not they will miss Tyreek Hill. I just think Hill is way, way too much of a weapon just to go, oh yeah, just put in another guy. He's just the same. No, he's not. Tyreek Hill is special. Another overreaction that we are getting is that Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers are done. Dude, Aaron has no receivers. He looked old. The Minnesota Vikings dominated the Packers 23-7 on Sunday. Minnesota looks like the class of the NFC North. Hey, I watched that game. And that's fair. Rodgers didn't look good on Sunday. Rodgers goes 22-34. He had just 195 yards. He had 0 touchdowns. And Aaron Rodgers actually threw an interception.
You done messed up, Aaron!
You could see. Dude was visibly upset. He was frustrated with his supporting cast. He misses Davante Adams, who is now in Las Vegas with the Raiders. But do you remember the Packers getting blasted 38-3 by the New Orleans Saints last year in the opener? I don't think I'm going to bury Aaron Rodgers quite yet. Remember, he is throwing to guys named A.J. Dillon and Romeo Doubs. But I just bet that he rallies the troops. I bet he gets those guys to step up at least a little bit. And I bet Aaron eventually just gets back to being Aaron. I still believe that Aaron Rodgers will have the Packers contending in the NFC North. I don't know if they can win a title. They'll still be very, very tough. Do not just count the Packers out. There's no way he's going to go that easily. There's no way. As he has told us before, relax. Things will get better for the Green Bay Packers. Okay, coming back, we still have a few more overreactions from the NFL to discuss. But then we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, every single year, we have teams that come out of nowhere. They surprise everyone with how good they play. And also, we have teams that we thought would be really, really good, and it doesn't always go like that. So let's continue our look at some NFL reactions that we are hearing already after week one. And let's go over to the NFC and one of the top contenders in the NFC. And that overreaction is that quarterback Trey Lance was a complete disaster for the San Francisco 49ers. On Sunday, the Niners got beat 19-10 by the Chicago Bears, who honestly probably won't be very good this year. Trey Lance went 13 of 28 for 164 yards and an interception. Hey, bring Jimmy Garoppolo back already. Trey Lance is not the guy. He's not ready. He needs more time. We need to bench Trey Lance and move on. We're already hearing that. You hear it on message boards. You hear it in the sports media world. It's not uncommon to hear that right now at all. And, you know, looking at that situation, I fully believe Trey Lance is going to struggle for a little while. He's a young guy. Remember, coming out of college, this was not a guy coming in polished, ready for the NFL. We all knew that. So are they pushing the envelope a little bit by putting him in and just turning him loose already? Yeah, they probably are. He's going to struggle. And at the same time, slow down. This feels way too soon. And I don't want to hear anything about Jimmy Garoppolo, I'll be honest. Because first off, I'm not sure that Jimmy G right now can even throw a football. We have not seen Jimmy Garoppolo even compete yet. I am not sure he is honestly even an option right now. But again, more importantly, remember this. Remember that in week one in the NFL, it's almost a weird preseason-ish game. It doesn't have the same feel as the rest of the season. It is just kind of weird. Guys haven't played together. Guys don't know each other. Both teams have been planning for like 3 or 4 months all for this game. And sometimes it doesn't all line up. It doesn't all work out. The San Francisco 49ers are going to look different in a few weeks. And my guess is that Trey Lance is probably going to improve. But if he doesn't, I mean, you have to at least wait for Jimmy Garoppolo to even be capable of coming into the game and competing. And right now, I'm not sure he's capable of doing that. We need to wait, watch, see how Trey Lance does, see if he starts to figure things out. If not, maybe in a month or so, maybe then you can start talking about Jimmy G. Right now, it's early. It's way, way too early. You know, speaking of quarterbacks, not sure if you saw this, but the Baltimore Ravens were unable to get a long-term deal done with quarterback Lamar Jackson. And we're hearing, hey, the Baltimore Ravens lowballed this guy. Why weren't they willing to pay him? Why didn't they take care of him? Did they really think they're going to find something better? Actually, I don't think that's what this is about at all. Because it sounds like Lamar Jackson turned down a $250 million contract extension. That kid's is big money. Now, you look at that and say, well, why would he turn that down? Is he just a spoiled brat? Well, maybe. Maybe he just thinks he's better than he is, but I don't think that's what this is. What this tells me is that Lamar Jackson either wants the Ravens to prove that they are willing and able to surround him with more talent, because right now, Lamar doesn't have a whole lot of weapons to work with. And if they're not going to do that, then maybe he does want out. Now, I will be very surprised if the Ravens let him leave without trying some other options, without bringing in some help. But I honestly think this is just Lamar saying, hey, you guys are expecting me to do everything for this team. Show me you're going to give me some support, and then maybe I sign on the dotted line. But until then, I'm not signing anything yet. Because you haven't proven anything yet. Since Ozzie Newsome got out of the game, the Baltimore Ravens roster moves have been lacking. And Lamar Jackson is the one feeling it. I don't blame him. I don't know if I'd sign that deal either. Staying in the AFC, we have another team that, you know, people are talking about this year. And now, after their game on Sunday, starting to hear a little bit more. Because Tua Tagovailoa and the Miami Dolphins beat Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots again. And make no mistake, this Dolphins team is a playoff contender. Now that they have new head coach Mike McDaniel and Tua has some weapons around him, hey, this team is legit. They're a contender. And that absolutely might be true. We'll see. Tua Tagovailoa did have 270 yards passing on Sunday. That's pretty impressive. However, here is my word of caution. The New England Patriots looked awful. Quarterback Mac Jones injured his back. The Patriot offense managed just 270 yards all day. And yet, the Patriots did hold Miami to just 65 rushing yards and under 3 yards per carry. Now, here's what I want to watch this next month. Because now, Miami goes to Baltimore. Then they are home against the Buffalo Bills. Then they go to Cincinnati. Are the Dolphins a contender? I don't know. But after those next 3 games, I think we're going to have a much better idea than we do right now. Speaking of teams, I'm not sure exactly what to believe when I see them. The Pittsburgh Steelers knocked off the AFC champion Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday, and the Steelers defense looked way better. Remember last year? They were the worst defense in the league against the run. Well, on Sunday, The Steelers defense forced quarterback Joe Burrow into four interceptions. They win a wild overtime game 23-20. Okay, that's good news, folks. Yeah, but I've got bad news. Here's some bad news. Got a little bit of it. First, pass rusher TJ Watt sounds like he's done for the year with a torn pectoral muscle. Now, Watt is asking for other opinions from other doctors, but I'm not sure that's going to change. If you tore your pectoral, you're probably done. But here's more bad news for the Steelers. They won the turnover battle on Sunday 5-0, and they still had to scrape out that 23-20 overtime win. You know, watching that game, and I did watch quite a bit of this game, I think this game told me more about the Bengals. And it told me that the Bengals' fortunes this year, they could be a little different. Because that offensive line that they set out to improve, it didn't look so good. Burrow was under heat all day. Oh, and also, Joe Burrow didn't look that impressive. He looked rattled out there. That kind of threw me off. I think both of these teams are going to be very, very interesting to watch going forward, but I'm not sure either one of them is truly going to be a Super Bowl contender this year, but they will be interesting to watch. Moving over to the NFC, Saquon Barkley looked as good as new running the football. Brian Daboll showed he trusts his team by going for 2 points at the end of the game, and the New York Football Giants could be way better than anyone thinks on Sunday. They upset the Tennessee Titans 21-20. I mean, I guess. I did like what I saw of Saquon Barkley. He looked really explosive again. But wow, Giants quarterback Daniel Jones, he looks absolutely awful. You know, we talk about it here on the Dose all the time, but every once in a while, you'll see a quarterback get broken. And I'm always kind of rooting for these guys. You know, Justin Fields at Chicago, don't break the kid. He might end up being good if you don't break him. Daniel Jones looks broken to me. And if you want some proof of that, Daniel Jones looked so bad late in that game on what ended up being the game-winning drive for the Giants. The Giants tried to have wide receiver Kadarius Toney throw a pass instead of Daniel Jones. Also, Brian Daboll going for two with over a minute left to play in the game. I know everyone's saying that's such a smart play. That's such a gutsy play. That's a dumb play. There was still over a minute left in the game. Going for two doesn't win you the game, but it could have lost you the game. That's an unnecessary gamble, and I'm going to bet those kind of choices will even out for the Giants over the full stretch of the season. Finally, we head to Little D, where quarterback Dak Prescott is out for a few weeks now. He's going to have surgery on his hand. The Dallas Cowboys are done after being manhandled by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home 19-3. And hey, head coach Mike McCarthy, he's probably going to be fired before Halloween. So a lot of overreactions coming out about the Dallas Cowboys this week. So let's think about that. Dak Prescott is out for a few weeks. Dallas Cowboys could be done for the year. Mike McCarthy could be fired soon. No, I don't know if those are overreactions. Here's what I'm wondering. Even before Dak gets hurt, I believe, and you can go back and listen to the tape, I think our whole panel believed that the Dallas Cowboys' chances this year were not strong. They lost a lot in the offseason, and they didn't do a whole lot to replace it. Here's what I'm wondering. Does this Dak Prescott injury actually give them the excuse that they want to actually be bad? That's what I'm wondering. Is this an overreaction to say the Cowboys are done? I'm not sure it is. But I do think Dak Prescott going down gives Dallas an excuse to say, well, we were going to be really good until Dak went down. And then, you know, we just decided to pull the plug on the season. We're going to start getting ready for next year. That makes a little bit of sense to me. You know, we love the NFL. It is so wild. It is so unpredictable. And every year there are 5, 6, 7, sometimes 8 teams that can win it all. But, you know, because there's just one game per week, it gives us all a chance to overreact completely to what we see. And those overreactions never run higher than in week one. Trust me, wait 3 or 4 weeks before we go making any grand declarations. We still won't know it all by then, but at least we'll know a little bit more by then. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, every single year, the NFL is full of surprises. Just last year, the Cincinnati Bengals went all the way to the Super Bowl. No one saw that coming. Hey, look at the Philadelphia Eagles winning it all in 2017. Who had that? I mean, like, besides Big Rob. Hey, we see surprises in the NFL every single year, but they aren't always good surprises. What about those bad surprises? You know, every single year, we see a team with some big expectations come out and then do absolutely nothing. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down the top 5 most disappointing teams in NFL history. Hey, they had big hype going into the season. It didn't exactly turn out that way, though. We start off at number 5. And we go back to 2003, where the Oakland Raiders entered the season as the AFC's reigning champion. And they boasted the NFL's defending MVP winner in quarterback Rich Gannon. Hey, Gannon had taken the Raiders all the way to the Super Bowl. Sure, they lost to the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl, but they're bringing a lot back that year. So there's no reason to think they wouldn't be contending for a Super Bowl again, right? But here's the problem. That 2003 Raiders squad, they were old. You had 38-year-old Gannon, the wide receivers Jerry Rice, he was 41, Tim Brown was 37, and then you had the running backs, Tyrone Wheatley, Charlie Garner, and Zach Crockett. They were all 31. That once high-scoring Raider offense, yet they managed to score just 16 points per game in 2003. Their head coach, Bill Callahan, actually called his team the dumbest team in America, and he wasn't wrong. The Raiders averaged 8 penalties for 70 yards per game, just giving the opponent 70 yards right off the top. Oakland went just 4-12 in 2003. They finished tied for last in the AFC West. They did earn the second pick in the NFL draft, at least, right? But then they used it on very average offensive lineman Robert Gallery. The 2003 Oakland Raiders come in today on our list of disappointments at number 5. We go back to 2011 for our number 4 entry, and we arrive at a team that you probably remember if you watch much NFL, because they were actually dubbed the Dream Team by quarterback Vince Young. Well, not quite. But you could understand why he said that. That Eagle team had quite a roster. Head coach Andy Reid had Michael Vick, LeSean McCoy, Ronnie Brown, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, Jason Babin, Nnamdi Asmuga, Asante Samuel, Dominique Rogers-Cromartie. That roster was stacked. I mean, at least on paper. But you don't play games on paper. When they actually got on the field, the Eagles were okay offensively. They scored 25 points a game. They were okay on defense, allowing just 20 points per game. But again, they committed way too many penalties, and they turned the ball over way too often. 25 interceptions and 23 fumbles. Yeah, that's going to be really hard to overcome, even if you are a self-proclaimed dream team. After the Eagles smacked around the St. Louis Rams in week 1, they lost 4 games in a row. And everyone said, well, it's just growing pains. It'll get better. And it did, but not by much. The Eagles finished the year winning 4 games in a row. That's pretty good. That brought their record all the way up to a whopping 8-8. The 2011 Philadelphia Eagles Dream Team lost as much as they won. And that puts them on our list today at number 4. We move on to number 3. And we go back to the year 2000. Following a 10-6 season, Washington owner Daniel Snyder made his team the league's first ever $100 million roster payroll. Hey, if you spend big money, you get big results, right? So Washington went out and they signed veteran stars like Bruce Smith, Mark Carrier, Deion Sanders, Jeff George. Sure, they were all way past their prime, but who cares? Snyder was going to show people how to build a dream team. He knows how to do this if anyone does, right? He also went out and he drafted LeVar Arrington. He drafted Chris Samuels with the second and third picks in the NFL draft. But again, you don't win games on paper. The Washington offense was led not by Jeff George, but by a very average Brad Johnson at quarterback. They scored just 17 points per game, and Johnson threw 11 touchdowns, but had 15 interceptions. After a loss in week 14 to the New York Giants by a crazy score of 9-7, that dropped their record to 7-6 on the year, and Snyder fired head coach Norv Turner. Maybe that'll spark this team to make a playoff run. Yeah, it didn't. Washington finished the season 8-8. They missed the playoffs completely. And now looking back, this was all kind of a hint of what was going to be coming with Daniel Snyder. And we found out it would mostly be dysfunctional. Daniel Snyder and Washington circa 2000 come in today at number 3. We arrive at the number 2 most disappointing team, and we reach a team that looked like they were on the verge of doing something like impossible. This is going to sound insane when I say this, but the Cleveland Browns had gone to the NFL playoffs 5 years in a row from 1985 until 1989. In fact, they went clear to the AFC Championship game in 3 of those 5 years. And they had come so sickeningly close to winning it all and going to a Super Bowl. Unfortunately for Cleveland, a guy by the name of John Elway was born. But Bernie Kosar and the Browns dominated much of the late 80s. So even after they lost again to the Broncos in 1989, there was hope. Maybe Cleveland will come back in 1990 and challenge yet again. But for some reason, when they flipped the calendar to the 90s, everything changed. Because the 1990 Cleveland Browns were a major disappointment in a town mostly known for disappointments. Bud Carson had actually taken over the head coaching job for Marty Schottenheimer in 89. But when the Browns started the season by getting whipped 34-0 by the Kansas City Chiefs in week 4, then they lost 42-0 to the Buffalo Bills in week 9, the Browns went ahead and fired Carson too. Again, it didn't help. They were shut out 3 times that season. And in week 14, the Houston Oilers beat the Browns 58-14. Kosar threw 5 more interceptions than touchdowns. And here's the really sad part about it. Things were never the same in Cleveland. And then eventually, there was no more Cleveland. Because that era ended. And just 5 years later, Browns owner Art Modell would pack up the team and move them to Baltimore. Got a more disappointing season than that? It's not going to be easy. But the 1990 Cleveland Browns come in today on our list at number 2. Okay, so when I tell you the number 1 team on our list, you might disagree, and I completely understand. But hear me out. Because if I told you that our number 1 team rolled to a 14-2 record, you'd say, come on, Clint. That hardly sounds like a disappointing season. But again, hear me out. Let me ask you this, Daily Dose listener. If I were to ask you to name the greatest team in NFL history, what would you say? Maybe you'd say the Green Bay Packers of the 60s. Maybe you'd say the 70s Pittsburgh Steelers, who were amazing. The San Francisco 49ers of the 80s and the 90s. They were incredible. Maybe you would say the Patriots of the 2000s. But without a doubt, one of the most dominant teams in NFL history was the 1985 Chicago Bears. The Bears defense, that is maybe the greatest defense in history. They allowed just 12 points per game. You had guys like Richard Dent and Steve McMichael and Mike Singletary and Wilbur Marshall and Otis Wilson. They didn't just beat people. They abused you and literally scared opponents. Quarterbacks quit games. They faked injuries to get out of the game. Now, the offense wasn't great, but with Walter Payton and Jim McMahon and Willie Gault, they were still very dangerous. The 85 Bears went 15-1. They rolled easily to a Super Bowl win. And get this, in the playoffs that year, they won their two playoff games and then the Super Bowl by a combined score of 101-10. So, in 1986, they come back off that season. They're going to do it again, right? They jump out to a 6-0 record. But this team wasn't quite the same. For one, Jim McMahon showed up all fat and sloppy. And the defense wasn't quite as dominant. They weren't quite as hungry. They got blown out 23-7 by the Minnesota Vikings in week 7. Okay. 2 weeks later, they lost to the Los Angeles Rams. But it was in week 12 that this season went downhill fast. Because playing the Green Bay Packers, McMahon throws a pass downfield. He's just walking down the field. When Packers defensive lineman Charles Martin picks McMahon up and slams him down on his shoulder, blowing his rotator cuff and ending his season. Now, when that happened, NFL referee Jerry Markbright, he was actually standing right there. He saw the play happen right in front of him. And he told Martin, 94, you're out of the game. I'm ejecting you. But Martin pulls away and says, I'm not going anywhere with you. Markbright told him, he says, if you don't come with me, I'm going to let the rest of this Bears team kill you. Martin said, well, let's go. That was it for the Bears, though. Without McMahon, they weren't the same. Mike Tomczak and Steve Fuller, they couldn't play like McMahon could play. They just weren't the same. The Bears did go 14-2. They still made the playoffs, but then they got beaten 27-14 by Washington. And the Bears dynasty, a dynasty of exactly one, was over. The 85 Bears, without question, were one of the greatest teams ever. The 86 Bears went 14-2, and yet somehow they were one of the biggest disappointments ever. Hey, expectations this year in the NFL, they're really high for a few teams. You think about teams we talked about, like Buffalo, Kansas City, Green Bay. The Los Angeles Rams are the defending champs. The Los Angeles Chargers have big expectations. And maybe all these teams live up to those expectations. Maybe they're all contenders. Or maybe they add their name to this list of disappointments too. And in a few years, we're talking about them and remembering that year that they just didn't quite live up to the hype. Hey, next week on The Dose, we are going to be doing something completely different. Now, we've done it once before, but it has been a while. But next week, we are going to be doing a completely live Daily Dose podcast as we will be recording immediately following the Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin Part 3 fight. Now, is it going to be a fiasco? Of course, because it's boxing. So yeah, it probably will. But this isn't just going to be a boxing podcast. We're going to have a few guests stop by. We will cover a number of different subjects. Trust me, you are not going to want to miss the Daily Dose next week. So be sure you stop by and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But most of all, thank you so much for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
You done messed up!